TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Goldstone Report, the legacy of the landmark investigation of the Gaza conflict, co-edited by Adam Horowitz, Lizzie Ratner, and Philip Weiss, was published in early 2011 by Nation Books. In the spring of 2009, South African judge Richard Goldstone set out on a mission to the Gaza Strip on assignment from the United Nations Human Rights Council to investigate possible war crimes committed during Operation Cast Lead, Israel's invasion of Gaza a few months earlier. Many other reports on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict had come and gone, but the account Goldstone's mission produced became the report heard around the world. It is one of the most controversial and historic documents published in the century-long conflict in Israel and Palestine. I'm taking you now to an early stop on the book tour with Adam Horowitz and Phil Weiss of the influential blog Mondo Weiss. They explain why they and Lizzie Ratner decided to produce a readable version of the voluminous Goldstone Report and refer to luminaries such as Bishop Desmond Tutu and Canadian writer Naomi Klein, who participated in this project. The book release event was organized by the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECCA, and co-sponsored by the National Lawyers Guild, U.S. Palestinian Community Network, Code Pink, Jewish Voice for Peace, Bay Area Women in Black, and others. The location was the First Congregational Church in Oakland, California, the date June 5, 2011. UC Hastings Law School professor George Bisharat gave the introduction.
Thank you so much for coming, and welcome, Adam and Phil. It is an urgent priority for all of us that Israel's impunity from international law, from its violations of international law, come to an end. And that is why the book project, launched by these two amazing writers, Adam Horowitz and Phil Weiss, together with Lizzie Ratner, is so important. You probably are all aware that Phil and Adam are co-editors of Mondo Weiss, a blogspot, which is one of the most interesting, provocative, and important sites of information and analysis on Middle East politics that you can find. If you've not yet partaken of it, you absolutely should. They have taken the landmark Goldstone Report, and they've edited it to readable proportions, and they've joined it with incisive commentary by a variety of prominent analysts, and are here today to put this important document into wider public circulation. Now, that may seem like an odd jump from ending Israeli impunity to appraising a book tour by a couple of writers. Indeed, it shouldn't fall on the shoulders of people like Adam and Phil to play a role in ending Israeli impunity. But it does, because our public officials have not only failed to stop Israeli violations of international law, they have been actively complicit in those violations. It is our government, perhaps more than any, that has spun the cocoon of impunity and enabled Israeli officials to escape liability for their wrongs. And I'm sad to say that this is true of Susan Rice, President Obama's UN ambassador, just as true of her as it was of John Bolton and Zalmay Khalilzad, who held that position during the Bush administrations. So recent WikiLeaks releases have revealed how actively Susan Rice, politicked behind the scenes at the UN to subvert the Goldstone Report, as well as other UN investigations of Israel's violations of international law. And I'm sure you are aware that Congress has also actively attempted to undermine the Goldstone Report through a number of resolutions that condemn it and that purport to direct US policy to block its effects. The report established that Israel likely committed war crimes before, during, and after the attack on the Gaza Strip in December and January of 2008-2009. Israel's ruinous siege of Gaza, imposed years before the invasion, collectively punished its residents in violation of international law. During the attack, Israeli troops killed civilians without justification, wantonly destroyed civilian infrastructure and private homes, and used weapons illegally. For example, Israeli troops targeted and destroyed Gaza's last functioning flour mill. Israeli armored bulldozers razed the chicken farm that provided 10% of Gaza's eggs, burying 31,000 chickens in rubble. Israeli gunners bombed a raw sewage lagoon, releasing 200,000 cubic meters of filth into neighboring farmland. Repeated pinpoint strikes on a water well complex destroyed all of its essential machinery. These are just some of the facts that led the mission, the Goldstone mission, to conclude in its report that Israel's objective in the attack was, in quotations, to punish, humiliate, and terrorize a civilian population, radically diminish its local economic capacity, both to work and to provide for itself, and to force upon it an ever-increasing sense of dependency and vulnerability, unquote. Since a January 2009 ceasefire, Israel has maintained its illegal blockade, keeping relief supplies and construction materials from Gaza, and thus guaranteeing continued Palestinian suffering. And yet, in a pattern that is consistent with the past, whether we think of Israel's serial invasions of and 18-year occupation of Lebanon, whether we reference the detention without trial, torture, and assassinations of Palestinians in the occupied territories, or whether we reference the colonization of the West Bank, no Israeli political or military leader truly has suffered any legal consequences for these acts. That's what impunity is: freedom from consequences for violations of law, whether domestic or international. Israel's impunity, ultimately, is good for no one. Those who suffer worst, of course, are its victims, both past and prospective. Israeli Jews themselves cannot possibly benefit from deepening regional and global enmity against them. We, those of us in the United States here, Israel's enablers in countless ways, also reap a terrible harvest for our unconditional support for Israel. Finally, the global community in its entirety suffers if some of Israel's illegal practices, such as targeted killings, are followed by other nations, such as ours, in effect threatening to rewrite international law through violence, and in a way that distorts and undermines the purpose of international law, international humanitarian law in particular, which is to protect civilians and to minimize damage and harm to people, even in times of war. Impunity for one state undermines the very legitimacy of international law. It does so because law has no credibility if there are people who live above the law and can engage in actions that others cannot without consequence. International law, we should be aware, protects the weak and strong alike, and we ignore its continuing abuse at our peril. Now, in the face of all of the power that is aligned in Israel's support, especially in this country, it may seem like tilting at windmills for people like Adam and Phil to travel around the country promoting this book and to work on their blog and the like. What is the point? Can these efforts to raise American consciousness about the realities of Israel's destructive behavior make a difference? The answer is absolutely. Ideas and perceptions matter a lot. For decades, ever since the 1942 Biltmore program, the Zionist movement, and then subsequently the State of Israel, have recognized this and have identified the strategic centrality of the United States, and in particular, the American public. Vast efforts and sums have been expended to ensure that the American public is exposed only to not just an Israeli narrative, but to a particular Israeli narrative. Needless to say, the Goldstone Report does not fit that narrative easily, and that is why it has been the subject of such withering attack by Israel and its supporters in this country and elsewhere. Nonetheless, things are changing. It is, after all, a tough challenge to convince the world that the sky is red and to persuade people not to believe what their eyes plainly see. So perhaps we are, as a public at least, in this country, starting to come to our senses. Beyond increased public awareness lies the challenge of our seemingly hopeless political class. We have all watched the Arab Spring in amazement and admiration as Arab citizens from all walks of life have risen up to challenge sclerotic, anti-democratic regimes. Perhaps it is not such a preposterous notion to suggest that what we need here is an American Spring. After all, our political system, once the envy of the world, seems to have fallen into crippling dysfunction. Somehow, in this American Spring, I'm seeing Adam Horowitz and Philip Weiss at the head of the pack. Please welcome them warmly to our community.
Thanks, Professor Bisharat, for that incredible welcome. And thank you, Mecca, for this invitation. Your work has been a model and an inspiration for years, and it's an honor to be here. For those who don't know us, I'm Adam, and that's Phil. And we're going to talk tonight about our book, The Goldstone Report. I'll go first, and then Phil. I usually start by reading a part from the book, and I will just give a brief intro because I know this crowd is really familiar with the situation in Gaza, the Goldstone Report, but something that you may not know is when the fact-finding mission first traveled to Gaza, led by Judge Richard Goldstone, Judge Goldstone actually set up a parallel process to the fact-finding mission. And that process was based on the truth and reconciliation process in South Africa, which he had witnessed. And through that, he set up open sessions in Gaza and in Geneva, because he wasn't allowed to enter Israel, where he allowed anyone to come and tell their story. Anyone who lived through the fighting, anyone who lived through Operation Cast Lead. And his belief was, and this was based on his experience in South Africa, that one of the first steps towards reconciliation and towards justice is simply the ability to tell your story and to have your story be heard. And these stories were not included in the Goldstone Report, the official document released by the UN, but they were published by the UN, and we were lucky enough to get access to them and incorporated some into the book. So I'm going to start off by reading one of them. This is a 30-year-old father of three named Khaled Abdrabo. On the 7th of January at 12:50 p.m., the Israeli army bulldozed our garden, and the Israeli tanks were positioned in front of our house. They started yelling at us through the speakers and asked us to leave our house. So I came out along with my wife and my three children, Suad, 8 years old, Samar, 4 years old, and Amal, 3 years old, and my mother, who was 60 years old. We were all holding white flags. The Israeli army was stationed right across from our house, so we stood by the entrance and we were holding flags, white flags. The tanks were 7 meters away from our house, and they did not say anything to us. There were two soldiers sitting on top of the tank. One of them was eating chips. The other one was eating chocolate. We were looking at them like, you know, what are we supposed to do? Where are we supposed to go? We were then surprised because all of a sudden a third soldier came out of the tank and started shooting at the children with no reason, no explanation, no pretext. My daughter, 3 years old, her stomach was hit and her intestines were coming out. I was really amazed. How could a soldier be firing at my daughter? So I carried my daughter, 3 years old. She could hardly breathe. Like I said, her stomach was wounded. My other daughter was also wounded in her chest, so I took both of them, Samar and Amal, inside the house. My wife and my mother and my other daughter, Suad, were still outside. But all of a sudden, my wife joined me carrying Suad. Her chest was wounded by many bullets. My mother, 60 years old, she was carrying a white flag, and she was also wounded on her forearm and also in her stomach. So we were all inside the house, and we started calling the ICRC, the ambulances, anybody to come and rescue us, but nobody came. All of a sudden, we heard an ambulance, but then all of a sudden, nothing, silence. Later, we saw that the Israeli soldiers had asked the ambulance drivers to come out of the car to undress, and they bulldozed the ambulance using their tank. My daughter Amal, 3 years old, she was dying, and by the end of the day, she did die. My other daughter, 8 years old, like I said, her chest was riddled with bullets. She passed away. My other daughter, Samar, she was riddled with bullets. Her back was open. She was not breathing through her nose, but through her lungs, and she was telling me, "Dad, help, help," and I couldn't do anything. She was thirsty. I was afraid if I gave her any water, something would happen. I didn't know what to do. My mother, 60 years old, she was also dying. I was helpless. I didn't know what to do for my children. There was my daughter dying in front of me. So I carried her and left the house, even if I had to die myself, because I couldn't take it anymore. I carried my daughter and left the house again, so that soldier, he might as well just kill my daughter and kill me myself. Because I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't let my children die in front of me. Like I said, that's a piece that I usually begin with when I talk about the book, and I do that for several reasons. One of those reasons is just to take us back to what it was like in that moment in the winter of 2008, 2009, and help us just recenter how we can imagine what it must have been like inside of Gaza. Another reason I share that is because, you know, oftentimes people will ask us, why did we put out a book about a UN report? And there's several reasons for that, and we'll talk about it. But really, one of the reasons, and in the Goldstone Report itself, it does an amazing job at raising the voices in this conflict that we never get to hear. As much attention as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict gets in its way, even in the mainstream media, we so rarely get to hear the voices of the people directly affected, directly living under siege, directly living under occupation. And the Goldstone Report is an incredibly powerful tool at doing that. Another reason that we put out the book and why we feel that the Goldstone Report is important, and Professor Besharat got to this a little bit, is that I think at its heart, and the reason why I think the report has been as controversial as it has been, is because at its heart, it is a call for accountability. And unlike previous reports that have either been put out by the UN or other agencies, it charts a clear path towards that accountability. And it's that path that the US, the Obama administration, and others are trying to stop. Just to recount a bit, the report does find that both Israel and Hamas were guilty of war crimes during the fighting in the winter of 2008-2009 and possible crimes against humanity. I think one of the most sort of grievous charges against Israel is their use of disproportionate and indiscriminate force in Gaza. I know a lot of people will have questions about the op-ed that Judge Goldstone wrote. One of the charges he made in that op-ed was that that he no longer believes that Israel had a policy to target civilians. One of the interesting things to remember is that that's not a charge that's actually made in the report itself. What the report says is because of using this strategy of indiscriminate and disproportional force, Israel made it impossible to protect civilians. And that's a different charge, but that's a war crime. One of the things that the Goldstone Report does that I also think is so important is that it puts that policy in a context. That Israeli policy did not begin with Operation Cast Lead. And in this way, the Goldstone Report, I think, serves as one of the best primers that we have on this most recent phase of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I want to read from a part of the official Goldstone Report where it talks about this policy and where it came from. Israel's operations in the occupied Palestinian territory have had certain consistent features. In particular, the destruction of buildings, including houses, has been a recurrent tactical theme. The specific means Israel has adopted to meet its military objectives in the occupied Palestinian territory and in Lebanon have repeatedly been censured by the UN Security Council, especially its attacks on houses. The military operations from 27 December to 18 January, which is Operation Cast Lead, did not occur in a vacuum, either in terms of proximate causes in relation to the Hamas-Israeli dynamics or in relation to the development of Israeli military thinking about how best to describe the nature of its military objectives. A review of the available information reveals that while many of the tactics remain the same, the reframing of the strategic goals have resulted in a qualitative shift from relatively focused operations to massive and deliberate destruction. In its operations in southern Lebanon in 2006, there emerged from Israeli military thinking a concept known as the Dahiya Doctrine, as a result of the approach taken to the Beirut neighborhood of that name. Major General Gadi Eisenkot, the Israeli Northern Commander Chief, expressed the premise of that doctrine. This is a quote. "What happened in the Dahiya quarter of Beirut in 2006 will happen in every village from which Israel is fired on. We will apply disproportionate force on it and cause great damage and destruction there. From our standpoint, these are not civilian villages. They are military bases. This is not a recommendation. This is a plan, and it has been approved." The report then goes on to quote Israeli leader after Israeli leader saying that what Israel did in Dahiya, it was going to do in Gaza during the lead up to Operation Cast Lead. And the report concludes, "The mission does not have to consider whether Israeli military officials were directly influenced by these writings. It is able to conclude from a review of the facts on the ground that it witnessed for itself that what is prescribed as the best strategy appears to have been precisely what was put into practice." And I know that Professor Bisharat already sort of outlined this, but I think it bears repeating that what that strategy meant in Gaza was the purposeful destruction of the civilian infrastructure, what it takes for the daily livelihood of Gaza. And that include, and again, I'll read the list of the chicken farms in Gaza, the flour mills, the sewage plants, the water wells, what it takes daily life to continue, in addition to over 1,400 Palestinians killed. And I think, and again, this is a quote that Professor Bisharat read, but I think it bears repeating again, where the report concludes that the attack was a deliberately disproportionate attack designed to punish, humiliate, and terrorize a civilian population. And you have to remember that Israel's rationale was that it was an entirely security-based defensive attack. The Goldstone Report finds otherwise. I think one of the other, you know, in talking about the Goldstone Report as a primer or Operation Cast Lead as being reflective of this moment, I think it's important to remember the U.S. role in all this. If you remember back to the attack on Lebanon in 2006, it was Condoleezza Rice at the UN who was actively working against a ceasefire while the rest of the international community was trying to put an end to the fighting. At that time, she said that we were witnessing the birth pangs of the new Middle East. Similarly, in Gaza, Israel tried to exploit the time between the Bush and Obama administrations, and people were calling out to Obama to speak out against the onslaught in Gaza. And although he was speaking out about other international issues, he refused to talk about this. And then Israel was mindful enough to end the fighting just days before his inauguration, so he wasn't put on the spot immediately. And I think the flotilla is another example of this too, where you can say Israel used both indiscriminate and disproportional violence in killing 9 of the activists on board, including a U.S. citizen, and still the United States was silent. So while this most recent period, going back to 2006, seems to be a period marked by horrible massacres, U.S. silence, and I would agree, Israeli impunity, I think this has also been an incredibly inspiring moment as well, because with each of these attacks, with each of these moments, we've seen the grassroots movement for Israeli accountability growing by leaps and bounds.
That was Adam Horowitz, co-editor with Phil Weiss and Lizzie Ratner of The Goldstone Report, The Legacy of the Landmark Investigation of the Gaza Conflict, published in early 2011 by Nation Books. Come back for the second part of this program when you will hear from Phil Weiss. He will focus on that growth of the grassroots movement for accountability of Israel. Adam Horowitz is also co-editor with Phil Weiss of the influential blog Mondo Weiss, on the internet as mondoweiss.net. Mondo Weiss is covering American foreign policy in the Middle East from a progressive Jewish perspective. Thanks to Jeffrey Blankford for this recording. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or a credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.